Welcome to the Shir Maral Gurayah, Parshas Ekev. Parshas Ekev, towards the very end, has the famous second parsha of Priyashma, the parsha of Hayoyim Shamoa. So I wanted to see some Rashis and Gurayahs that are relevant to that particular parsha. So first of all, in the very beginning of the parsha, you know, it starts off, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Hayah in Shamoa Tishma'u El Mitzvosai will come to pass in Shamoa Tishma'u. If you listen, you listen. Literally, in other words, the verb for listening is gobble. If you listen to my mitzvah, so then all kinds of good things are going to happen, as the Pasuk goes on to say. What is the significance of the doubling of the verb lishmoa, shamoa, tishmo? So Rashi writes, if tishma the yoshon, tishma the chodosh. If you listen to the old, you'll listen to the new. The chain, similarly, says Rashi, we find in last week's Sedra, v'hoyo ishacholach tishkach, will come to pass, this week's Sedra, will come to pass, if you forget, Hashem Elokecha. So why the double loss of the double language of forgetting over there? Im hischalto ishacholach, sovcha, shetishtakach kula. If you forget a little bit, if you start forgetting, the end result is that you've got to forget everything. If you start to forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the end you'll forget it all. So that's similar to Shama Tishma, or Shama Tishma'u. If you start listening, you listen to the old, you'll listen to the new. We have yet to define what it means to listen to the old and listen to the new. Be that as it may, Rashi writes, Shekin Siv, the Megillah, in Tazveni Yom, Yomayin HaZvekah. Right, the Gemara brings in the Sefer Megillah that if a person abandons his Torah study even for a day, so the Pasuk in Mishlei applies to him, if you abandon me for a day, I will abandon you for 2 days. In other words, you know, the more a person pulls away and sets aside even for a short period of time his commitment to Limud HaTorah, it has what we would call in English a snowball effect. You know, you start forgetting, you start distancing yourself, and it just accumulates, and in the end, the person is, you know, far more distant than they thought they were going to be initially. This drasha in Tishma V'yashon, Tishma V'chadosh, if you listen with the old, you listen to the new, appears twice in the Gemara, in Brachos, and in Sukkah. And interestingly, there, the Gemara relates this drasha not to our pasuk, v'hayah yishamah tishmael mitzvosai, but to a somewhat similar pasuk in Parshas Bishalach, right after the incident that takes place with Mara, where the bitter waters are transformed into sweet waters. So there the pasuk says, v'yomer yishamah tishma, l'kol Hashem elokecha, v'yosav eino tasa, kol anachlo ashvitamte b'mitzayim lo'osim olecha. If you listen to the words of Hashem, you know, all good things are going to happen to you. You know, all of the terrible forms of sickness, of illness that were imposed upon the Egyptians are not going to come upon the Jewish people. There also is a double language of, you know, Shamoa Tishma, and it's on that pasuk that the Gemara in Brachos and in Sukkah makes this drasha in Tishma B'Yashon Tishma B'Chodosh. What's the meaning of in Tishma B'Yashon Tishma B'Chodosh? If you listen to the old, you'll listen to the new. So here, the Maharal introduces an interpretation without comment. You know, he doesn't present this as a novel interpretation. He presents this just as the simple interpretation in Rashi. I think we'll see in a few moments that it's not as obvious as the Maharal would like us to think, that this is the straightforward interpretation of what Rashi has to say over here. But first, let's see the Maharal. The Maharal writes, Pirush, what does it mean in Tishma B'Yashon, Tishma B'Chodosh? In Tishma Mitzvos, Shekvar Shomato, V'Yodata Osam, V'Yato Mekayim Osam? If you have listened to Mitzvos, which you're already familiar with, and you are fulfilling those Mitzvos, in other words, Yashon, in this context, the old, in this context, means Mitzvos which you already have learned and are carrying out, if you're doing, you know, Mitzvos which you already know, Tishma b'chadosh, so you will listen to and carry out the new. Hey, mitzvos, hashem chadoshim l'cha. you will learn about and carry out new mitzvahs. Shehalei mitzvah goreres mitzvah. And says the Maharal, this links to the famous statement of Chazal Pirkei Avos, one mitzvah pulls with it another mitzvah. So in other words, according to the Maharal, the statement in Tishma B'Yashon, Tishma B'Chodesh, if you listen to the old, you listen to the new, is about mitzvahs specifically. And roughly speaking, the way to paraphrase what Chazal is saying over here, what Rashi is saying over here, according to the Maharal, is as follows. If you get in the habit of doing certain mitzvahs, you will be exposed to the opportunity to learn about new mitzvahs and carry out those new mitzvahs. Right? Getting involved in the good old, you know, familiar mitzvahs, you know, the goldie oldies, so to speak, you know, the mitzvahs which you knew and were following and carrying out for a long time, your adherence to those mitzvahs will bring in their wake many more new mitzvahs for you to do, and that's a wonderful thing, mitzvah goreres mitzvah. One mitzvah brings another mitzvah after itself. If one looks in Rashi's interpretation to both the Gemara in Brachos and in Sukkah, where this phraseology appears, one gets the impression that Rashi and Shas, at least, seem to have a different, a slightly different interpretation of this statement. Dear Rashi applies the idea of in Tishma B'Yosham, Tishma B'Chodosh, not so much to mitzvahs, but to Limud HaTorah, to the act of Torah learning. And dear Rashi in Brachos writes that essentially what Chazal is saying over here is it's important to chazer, it's important to review that which you've learned. In Tishma B'Yosham, if you listen to in this context means if you review, if you, you know, if you learn, if you go over the yashon, the old material, the material that you've learned already, tishma b'chadosh, that will then give you the ability to be able to learn new material, right? And again, on the simplest of levels, what Rashi seems to be saying, again, something I think most of us can relate to, is that if you do a good job gathering and reviewing things that you've already learned, that then gives you the base to be able to learn new things. But conversely, if you learn stuff and then forget it, so that makes it that much harder to be able to learn new things. Part of the positive attribute of doing chazara, of reviewing, is that it gives you a base upon which to build to learn new things. Rashi and Sukkah writes a little bit differently, but also seems to apply this statement of Chazal to Limud HaTorah. Right? Rashi there in Sukkah writes, in Tishma B'Yosham, if you go over the old material, Tishma B'Chadosh, you will be able to create Chidushim and see new novel ways of understanding the material which you thought you knew already. And again, I think all of us who've ever learned anything, you know that experience as well. You know, if you go over the parsha well, so then all of a sudden new things start jumping out at you from the parsha. You know, I read this pasuk 1,000 times in the past, but you know what? I never really looked at it this way, that way, the other way. But it's only because I went over the pasuk many times that all of a sudden a new way of looking at the pasuk presents itself to me. So that's in Tishma B'Yosham, Tishma B'Chodosh. If you make a point of going over the material that you already knew, you'll see new dimensions in that material that you didn't have before. One way or another, right, Rashi, both in Brachos as well as in Sukkah, interprets this minor Chazal as speaking not about mitzvot, but about Limud HaTorah. Right? Either review is a good thing, it will help you learn new things, where review is a good thing, it will help you understand on a deeper level that which you thought you already knew. Why does the Maharal come and without batting an eyelash give a totally different interpretation? The Maharal says, we're not talking about Limud HaTorah, we're talking about mitzvah. We're talking about the concept of mitzvah goreres mitzvah. If you do one mitzvah, Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to send you more and new mitzvahs, and you're going to get involved in doing that. One would think that the greatest authority as to what Rashi means is Rashi. So in other words, if Rashi in Brachos and Sukkah interprets a Maimar Chazal in a certain fashion, and then Rashi on Chumash quotes that same Maimar Chazal, you know, offhand, I would think that however Rashi interpreted that statement of Chazal on Shas is the way that Rashi means to interpret it in his commentary on the Chumash. So why does the Maral come along and give an interpretation that seems to argue on Rashi? I think, I didn't see anyone raise this question. To me, I when you just start putting the Rashis together, I think it's a pretty strong question. Again, it's obvious, just as at the outset, you know, the Maral knew Rashi and Brachas, the Maral knew Rashi and Sukkah. You know, we didn't, maybe this is Chadash for us, but certainly it was Yasham, you know, from the Maral's perspective. You know, it's not like we pulled some magic Rashi out of a hat that the Maral certainly was not aware of. We certainly know that the Maral was aware of the Rashis on Shas. That's another process that's obvious. But I thought that perhaps, you know, what prompts the Maral to give a different interpretation is as follows. It's really contextual. And, you know, it probably goes back to the fact that when the Gemara in Brachos and Sukkah quotes this interpretation of Chazal in Tishma B'Yosha and Tishma B'Chadosh, it does not quote our Pasuk, as we mentioned at the outset. It quotes the Pasuk from Parshas B'Shalach, Vayomer, in Shema Tishma L'Kol Hashem Elokecha, Vazanta Mitzvosof. If you listen to the voice of Hashem, now what is that talking about over there? That is right after certain halachos have been revealed to the Jewish people at Marah, as we spoke about last week. Shom lo koko mishpat, shom yisahu. The Jews were taught para aduma, kibud avraim, Shabbos, and dinim. They were taught about how to set up the court structure. Many of those halachos were given to the Jewish people at that time simply for the purposes of learning. They were not meant to be implemented at that time. I mean, the most obvious example of that is Parah Aduma. You know, the Tarsha of Parah Aduma might have been given to the Jews at Mara, but they were not actually shechting and burning a Parah Aduma back in Mara. The whole concept of Tumma V'Tara wasn't an active concept yet. Right? So the concept of Parah Aduma was given to the Jewish people at Mara for Limud, you know, for the purposes of learning. One could probably argue much the same about the dinim that were given to the Jewish people in terms of setting up a court system at that particular time. It doesn't seem as if, you know, certainly all the aspects of dinim were acted upon at that point in Jewish history. Witness the fact that until we get to Parshas Yitro, Moshe is doing everything on his own in terms of carrying out the judicial system. So certainly all of the concepts of dinim may not have been put into place at that time. So in that context, when you talk about Shema Tishma, in the context of the Pasuk of B'Shalach, we're talking about Limud HaTorah. So Limud HaTorah, so Rashi in Brachos and in Sukkah gives interpretations of this Maimer Chazal that are consistent with Limud HaTorah. But what Parshas Eicha is talking about? V'haya in Shema Tishma'u al Mitzvosai. We're talking about the Mitzvos in Parshas Eicha. We're not really talking about Limud HaTorah specifically, we're talking about the whole system of doing mitzvahs. So the Maral says Rashi took an interpretation of Chazal that was really made in one context, and Rashi then applied it to a different context. It's not really what Chazal is saying. It's Rashi taking the statement of Chazal and just moving it over and applying it to a different pasuk. So in this pasuk, what this Maimer Chazal means is something different than what it means in the original context. I think you have to say that, you know, in order to understand how the Maral can give an interpretation of Rashi and Chumash that's different than Rashi on the Gemara. Having said that, so then the Maral raises an interesting issue which touches on a phrase which many of us may have heard, in one context or another. The Imlokim, if you don't interpret V'haya in Shama'a Tishma'u as having this intent that in Tishma V'yashon, Tishma V'chadosh, if you follow the old mitzvahs, you'll follow the new mitzvahs, the way the Maral is interpreting it, in Tishma V'yashon, you wouldn't have to repeat the verb Tishma, because you should say V'haya in Tishma'u al Mitzvosai, the doubling up of the Lashon of Shmiya, of the verb that speaks about listening, you know, must have some added significance. So says the Maral, but wait a minute.
We know there is a concept which some Tanoim holds of, that Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam, meaning the Torah speaks in the language of man, which means, roughly speaking, don't get so hung up when the Torah uses what seems to be an extra phrase or maybe an extra letter or an extra word or something that seems extraneous. The Torah speaks, to some extent, the way human beings speak. If you jumped on a human being every time he used an extra word or an extra phrase, right? Try dashing every time a person says the word like. So I was like going to the store. So why did you say I was like going to the store? You mean to say you weren't really going to the store? You were just kind of going, right? If you dashed every time a person made an extra phrase, you know, said an extra word, used an extra letter, so then, we would read all kinds of things into what people are saying. So all the time, I would say, Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam, which means the Torah uses a typical way of speaking, and you can't always read so much significance into an extra word, an extra letter. So it says, V'haya Yishama'a Tishma'u. Okay, so maybe the reason Shama'a Tishma'u is repeated is because in Hebrew, that's how people talk. Right? Why are we necessarily jumping and saying that, you know, there's some kind of significance to the fact that Shmira is repeated in the Post? That's not our answer to the question. Yes, Lomar?
He says that
Mara wants to know like this. And there are Tanaim who do say Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam. So why don't we use that concept over here? Why is Rashi so convinced that V'haya Yishama'a Tishma'u, right, means that, it must mean something else. It can't just mean, if you really listen. Why don't we just say, V'ayon Shema'at Ishmael, means if you really listen to the mitzvahs, and that's how people talk.
It doesn't have to be reconciled with the fact that every word, every oath,
So on the surface, the positions who hold Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam would not agree with that. In other words, they would say, you can't necessarily, you know, jump on every word, on every oath, you know, whatever. You know, sometimes the Torah just says it in a certain way, because that's how people speak. Now, again, so you have to either understand that a little bit deeper, and I think part of what we're going to try to get tonight is the Maral is going to give us a deeper understanding of what Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam means. In any case, so the Maral raises this issue, and again, I think we might add, although the Maral doesn't say this, the question is particularly acute if we're correct in what we said before, that Chazal don't really quite say the drasha that Rashi brings over here. Now, Chazal said this drasha on a different pasuk. It's Rashi who's taking the drasha of Chazal on a pasuk in Bishalach and applying it to Akev. So especially in light of the fact that it's Rashi's application of a drasha in Chazal, and not verbatim what Chazal said, you can certainly ask the question even stronger, don't we have a concept, Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam? So on that, says the Maral, are you sure to ask the Kirabana? The Sphere Lahu Zavar Min Dibur Kolashim Ne'adam. Right? So the easiest answer to the question, says the Maral, is, well, the whole concept of Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam is a machlokas. It's not agreed upon. Most, very often seen as a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, but it's also a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. So here, Rabbi Shimon says, Dibur Torah Kolashim Ne'adam, the Chachamim disagree. So Rashi's drasha is in accordance with the Chachamim. Now, that's the first answer. Now, the truth is, that's not an entirely satisfactory answer, if you think about it, because what then comes out is that, you know, Rav Shimon's version of Rashi, if one will, would not have this drasha, right? In other words, this drasha, the way the Maral is explaining at this point is that the drasha, Tishma V'yashem, Tishma V'chadas, doesn't work according to all the Tanoim. Some Tanoim would disagree, not with the idea of Mitzvah Goreres Mitzvah, but they would certainly disagree with the idea that the concept is to be found here in the Pasuk. But then the Maral adds as follows. Afilu L'Rebbe Shimon, Lo ka'amar ha'kefi shahadrash el kemashmaot lashem b'nei adam. Aval kishadrash kemashmaot lashem b'nei adam. Darshinam. The af lashem b'nei adam kasher yachti l'shono hu l'chadze ko'inyam. The Maral says, I think it's a very important point over here.
even those shittos and panoim who reject the concept of who embrace the concept of divrei Torah kolashim they all done that sometimes the Torah just speaks in the idiom of people, and you can't get too hung up on every repetition of a word or a letter or whatnot. Even they don't dismiss the idea of dashing extra words and extra letters entirely. And Lachar, this is a very important idea, because again, as Rabbi mentioned just a moment ago, I mean, we do have this concept that, you know, the letters of Torah, the words of Torah are measured very carefully. So the position that says Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam just wave its hand and do away with all of that? No, the Gemara is full with drashas based on an extra word, an extra letter. So the position that says Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam just comes along and says, nah, just kidding. None of that is really correct, right? Why does it say an extra vav? Ah, sometimes people throw out an extra vav, right? Why does it double the lashon? Ah, sometimes people throw, you know, double the lashon. The whole system of drashas. I mean, again, you're going to take the idea of Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam to its logical conclusion. On the surface, it seems like the whole concept of darshanim is going to fall apart. You know, you take a significant percentage of the drashas out of the Gemara, because you could always respond to them, what are you darshaning this extra word, this extra letter, you know? Nah, that's just the way that people talk. Says Maral, it's not true. Even the position that says Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam says that you do have to dash them, because sometimes you have to dash them the way people talk also. For instance, right, let's just put it in an English idiom so we can appreciate it, right? A person says, you know, would you be interested in coming for dinner? That's different than going over to a person and saying, it would be extremely, extremely, extremely important for you to come to dinner tonight, right? Why do they repeat the word extremely three times? Well, probably because they mean it's very, very, very important. It's to signify exactly how important it is that you're supposed to come to dinner. It's not just common invitation. The repetition of the word has significance. So says the Maral, even the position that says Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam, sometimes repeating a word is darshan, because if a person said that, we would, so to speak, darshan it. So Kal v'chomer, the Rabbi Shalom says that the Torah, we would certainly darshan it. So for instance, he gives an example, right? In the context of Hashanah Saveda, it says, Hashem Toshiv, right? You should return it. Or you should return it, you should return it. And Chazal darshan, you know, Emily Elapan Echod, Mea Pa'omim Minayin, Shemech Zira, Ubarcha Minayin, Shemech Lahakhti. Let's say, you know, the person lost his animal, and you give the animal back, and then the animal runs away, and you find it again, you bring it back. And 100 times, you know, you're finding the animal, bringing it back. You know, at a certain point, are you entitled to say, you know, if you can't watch your animal, so why should I have to make myself crazy bringing back the animal? Says the Gemara, no, Afilu Mea Pa'omim. Even if you have to do Hashavah Sadeh 100 times, you still have to do it. Why? Because Hashem Toshiv, you should return, you should return. Now, is that against the idea of Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam? No, says the Maral. That works even within Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam. Because the very repetition of Hashem Toshiv is meant for emphasis. So what's the idea of emphasis? Meaning, you know, even if you have to do it many times, you really, really, really have to give back the Aveda that was lost. That's the idea that's being brought out over here. And that's true for all repetitions in Chumash. So says the Maral, even if you hold Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam, this phrase, the Hayom Yishama Atishma'u, is so to speak, pregnant with meaning. The repetition calls out for some kind of interpretation, because of it. Again, Lahavdil in a human context, the repetition would be, subject to some kind of interpretation as well. As I said, we'll pick up after Ma'ariv with a second idea from the Maral on the Parsha of Ahayon Yishlamala. Okay, welcome to the second half of the Shir Maral Gurai and Parshas Akev. There's a well-known Rashi and a Ramban towards the end of the Parsha of Ahayon Yishlamala. And the Maral quotes this Rashi and this Ramban and elaborates a little bit on his own. So this is in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches, So after the Torah has described that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael don't do the Rosh Hashem if they turn to other gods, so the Pasuk says, Yitzayim, Vavadatem Meheira on the Al-Horitz HaTov HaShem 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 HaShem, you will be speedily lost off of the land, the good land which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given to us. In other words, you know, there seems to be a prediction of the Golos, you know, the exile which is going to take place. Then Pasuk says, you should place these words on your hearts, on your souls. You should put on tefillin. So that's the comments on Yidches. What's the juxtaposition? You'll be lost, you'll be exiled off of the good land. And then you should place my words on your hearts, on your souls, you should put on tefillin. So Rashi writes, the juxtaposition is, even once you go into Golos, you, the Jewish people, should still be distinguished through the performance of mitzvahs. You should put on tefillin while you're in Golos. You should put on mezuzos on your doors while you're in Golos. In order that the mitzvah should not seem to be new when you come back to Eretz Yisrael, as the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, when you, the Jewish people, go into Golos, make signposts for yourselves, which, again, Rashi over here understands to mean, keep doing things in the Golos that will remind you of Eretz Yisrael and make it easier for when you go back again. It's an interesting Rashi. Rashi seems to be saying that the reason to put on tefillin and put on mezuzos and chutzal ha'aretz is practice, right? What's that? Rabban, right? So yes, we'll see. This Rashi is very, very interesting Rashi. So in other words, when you go into Golos, keep putting on tefillin, keep putting mezuzos on your doors, so that when you come back there to Yisrael, you know, after the Geula, and, you know, you get stopped at the kosher by some guy from Chabad, and he says, you know, would you like, did you put on tefillin today? And you say to him, I'm sorry, I'm a chutznik, I don't know what you're talking about, right? We don't want that to happen, right? And the guy from Chabad at the kosher says, did you put on tefillin yet today? He says, ah, that's just what you think, because I live outside of Eretz Yisrael, I don't put on tefillin, right? But essentially, Rashi seems to be saying, were it not for that calculus, fundamentally speaking, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be putting on tefillin and chutz la'aretz. Maybe we shouldn't be putting mezuzos on our doors and chutz la'aretz. And Rashi, the Maral writes on that, Mashikosta Rashi, Shelo Yeidonim Aleichem Kichadoshim. The notion that Rashi writes over here, that the mitzvot are performed in chutz la'aretz so that they shouldn't seem to be strange or new when we come back to Eretz Yisrael. Kosha. That's the reason we put on tefillin and chutz la'aretz. The reason we put on tefillin and chutz la'aretz, because tefillin is defined as a chovas haguf. It's a mitzvah which is incumbent upon us, not because we live in Eretz Yisrael. It's incumbent upon us. We male Jews who have bodies have to put tefillin on our bodies. In other words, it's incumbent upon us wherever we happen to be. It's not just practice. Fundamentally, the mitzvah itself applies to us wherever we are. So what's Rashi writing? That the whole thing is essentially practice. So he does bring a first interpretation to Maral. Yesh Mepharshim, some explain, Rabbi Hartzman in his notes to Maral says he does not know who these Mepharshim are. So he brings one interpretation, and then we'll see, a very, very fascinating interpretation, and we'll see the Maral brings his, what he thinks to be the correct, you know, his own interpretation. Like the Maral, it could very well be that circumstance, that even though in theory, tefillin and mezuzah would apply in chutz la'aretz, the circumstances of our existence in Golos would mean that functionally we would not put on tefillin, and functionally we would not put on mezuzah. So he says as follows. Oftentimes, maybe even most of the time for our Jewish history, we didn't necessarily own our homes in Golos. We rented our homes. The in came, lo yikaim wo yisrael mitzvus mezuzah the Golos, she'ein lam batim yuchadis. The Jewish people don't have homes that belong to them in Chutz La'aretz. So you would think that even though in theory the mitzvah of mezuzah applies to Jews in Chutz La'aretz, circumstances are such that l'maisa practically were not actually chayes. So Rabbi Hartman in his notes asked the following: Hare mezuzah chol v'shadar. And if we are renting, so we're still obligated to put mezuzahs on our doors. What, you're not obligated to put up a mezuzah unless you own? I mean, that would exclude a lot of Jews even today. You know, by the way, in Eretz Yisrael as well, from putting up a mezuzah. Now, you could say that the Jews are so hounded and go from place to place that they don't stay anywhere 30 days at a stretch. And the halacha is, if you're renting in Chutz La'aretz, you only are obligated to put up a mezuzah after you're renting for 30 days. So maybe the maral means that we're so persecuted that every 25 days or so we have to find a new house in Chutz La'aretz. So really, 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 it's rare that a person would have to put up a mezuzah in Chutz La'aretz. So right now, Rabbi Hartman, hard to say that that's what the maral means. I mean, certainly that doesn't correspond to our historic experience. Yeah, okay, we got thrown out of Spain and many other countries, but not after 30 days, you know, and not after 25 days. We stuck around long enough to be higher than the Zusa. Right, it's fundamentally temporary. Right, so maybe. He, Rabbi Hartman writes, like how it also shame what you saw you called him. Maybe says what the maral means is that oftentimes in Golos we end up sharing homes with the non-Jew. In other words, I don't think it means that the Jew and the non-Jew are living literally in the same home together, but there's oftentimes a two-family home or something like that. In other words, some kind of arrangement whereby the non-Jew, I guess, is often going into the Jewish home. That's the only way I can understand it. In other words, the non-Jew is not only the landlord, but the non-Jew is a landlord who is very much present and walks in uninvited all the time and just makes himself at home in the Jew's home. So to some extent, it's really a shared home. And the Rambam writes that a shared home, again, this relevant to college students oftentimes, you know, college students sometimes find themselves a Jew and a non-Jew together in a dorm room, right? So the Rambam writes that in such a circumstance, the house is exempt, you know, from having to put on a mezuzah. Is that what he means? Not totally clear, but in any case, maybe circumstances would be such that we would be exempt from mezuzah and Chutz La'aretz. And then he writes the following, which is really quite astounding. The pain that tefillin. The truth is, fundamentally speaking, even though tefillin on a fundamental level does apply in Chutz La'aretz, practically, the circumstances are those make it difficult to put on tefillin for the following reason. Sarech shlo yotziah adayim from that tefillin. The halacha is that while you're wearing tefillin, you're not supposed to be thinking about anything else. The yameim adayim that tefillin hagolus yotzei v'goyim ha'yehesek hadas. Right? When we're in Golos, it's hard to concentrate and to focus on the tefillin that we're wearing because we're so laden down by burdens and worries and the like, we can't really focus. So that should be enough to exempt us from tefillin. Not that fundamentally speaking, tefillin doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz, but just the circumstances of being in Chutz La'aretz are so overwhelming that would exempt us from tefillin were it not for the idea that we have to force ourselves to put on tefillin anyway. Because when we come back to Eretz Yisrael during the time of the Geula, and we can put on tefillin without the daigus, without all of the worries that we would have ordinarily in the Golos, so then we'll certainly be obligated. So even now, when we can't really do the mitzvah of tefillin fully properly, we should nonetheless put on tefillin as practice for when we go back. A very, very interesting idea. No, this is the maral. This is all the maral. Again. Right, so I guess you would say that it's worth it to put on tefillin even with the possibility or the near probability of Hesach Hadas rather than have the Jewish people forget about the whole idea of tefillin altogether. Yeah. Right. Okay, it's a moot point because the archive and so in Chutzlaritz, right? No one's disputing that. Just the Maral was saying, Rashi seems to be saying conceptually, the reason we're putting on Tefillin in Chutzlaritz is to prepare, for an eventual return under the Geula. Even though fundamentally speaking, we really wouldn't be chayyus. So that's the question that the Maral is trying to figure out. Why wouldn't we be chayyus fundamentally? So we quote the Tishma Farshim. Maybe we didn't need tefillin, we'd be exempt because, it's so difficult to put on tefillin with the proper, without having after chadash.
In other words, Rashi is saying the truth is that we are
mitzvah
to put on tefillin in Chutzlaritz.
Right.
But
when
you try to understand the reason for
the secret, he's saying again. So Rashi says that fundamentally speaking, we really shouldn't be higher than so. Except that, we're practicing for when we go back there as Israel. What does that mean? Well, what do you mean? We shouldn't be fundamentally obligated themselves. So the Maral wants to bring those who says we should be them because of the idea of the inability to keep our focus on the tefillin in Chutzal Ha'aretz. So, the Maral brings that. He brings such an interpretation. And he doesn't dismiss it, but he then brings from the Ramban, the Ramban is Orer Bozer, the Omer Shiesh Bozer Sold Omuk. The Ramban also famously speaks about this Rashi, and he says there's a deep idea, a deep secret, which is implicit in this Rashi. Ani Agaleh Haso, says the Maral, I'm going to reveal the secret. The Ramban spoke about a secret, let me tell you what the secret is. The Ramban writes back in Parshas Toldos, says the Maral, this is a famous Maral, the famous Ramban, but it's not here. The Ramban writes about it in Toldos, and the Maral says that's what the Ramban means when he speaks about the soul that's over here. In Toldos, the Ramban writes that the Torah fundamentally, it has a certain connection to Eretz Yisrael. It represents the laws of God as the master of the land. Torah is the national law of Eretz Yisrael, because God is the God of Eretz Yisrael. He's the God of the whole world, but he has a special connection to Eretz Yisrael. So, that's what Ramban goes on to say, that when the Avos HaKadoshim kept Torah, they only did so in Eretz Yisrael, because in those three Matan Torah days, the Torah was connected to the Avos in Eretz Yisrael, but not outside of Eretz Yisrael. Avos Yisrael, komitzah shichavos sargov chayv la'asos, lohoi roi shiyisrael yishra amitzvot b'chutzu la'aretz, kevon shein mishpat elokei ha'aretz, avol, im lo nasa Hashem yisprach shiyishra amitzvot b'chutzu la'aretz, yikayimu osam kamo ba'aretz, hoyo bevorem la'aretz achakach nesina chadosha, kivon shikar nisbaku amitzvot chas tishalom. The end can the sin of chadasha. Lachach omer, shilachach yikaymu amitzvus b'chutzal aretz gamkin. Shim lo kein hayisar shiu amitzvus b'vorm la'aretz chadashim. The end can dover chadash klal, shepam achas nit natara me'ashem yisorach lo shteiko omer. Comes to Maral with the following yisod. By definition, there can only be one act of giving of the Torah. The Torah can only be given once, right? The notion that there would be a second giving of the Torah is antithetical to Judaism, right? The Torah was given once in Har Sinai. There will never be another act that will be equivalent to the giving of the Torah. Says the Maral, what the Ramban means to say in Rashi is the following idea. Fundamentally speaking, the mitzvahs really only apply in Eretz Yisrael. And fundamentally speaking, when the Jews go into Golos, they should really be exempt from all of the mitzvahs. The only problem is, if the Jews go into Golos and they become exempt from the mitzvahs, and then they come back there to Israel, and I have to start keeping mitzvahs again, that would then require the equivalent of a second Hashinai. The Torah would have to be given a second time, and it can't be that the Torah is given a second time. So the mitzvahs in their entirety can never be allowed to lapse so as not to create a new giving of the Torah. There can't be a second or a third giving of the Torah. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam legislated that there will be certain mitzvahs that apply even outside of Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, the fundamental question that Rashi started off with, that the Maharal started off with, rather, how can Rashi say that the only reason to keep mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz is practice? These mitzvahs like tefillin and mezuzah are chovas haguf. They're more than just practice. They're fundamentally incumbent upon us. Since the Maharal, what Rashi used to say is as follows. Of course, these mitzvahs like tefillin and mezuzah are a chovas haguf. They're not, Rashi didn't mean to say that they're merely practice. But Rashi is trying to explain why the Torah would set up mezuzah and tefillin as a chovas haguf. Why would they be something which is incumbent upon us at all times, being that on a fundamental level the Torah only applies in Eretz Yisrael? Why would the Torah, if the Torah really does only apply in Eretz Yisrael, so then why would these mitzvahs apply even in Chutz La'aretz? Why are they considered to be a Chovas HaGuf which is incumbent upon us at all times? It answers Rashi, according to the way the Maharal understands it, because if Torah were to cease being applicable, that would necessitate a new Torah. And if it would necessitate a new Torah, when the Jews come back to Eretz Yisrael, that's unacceptable. Torah can't be allowed to last. So Mimela, what comes out in Rashi is as follows. When Rashi uses the language, Hanichu Tfilin, Asu Mezuzos, Kidei Shlo Yilachem Chadoshim Kishetachteru, we usually interpret Kidei Shlo Yilachem Chadoshim Kishetachteru, they shouldn't seem to be new. Right? In other words, the practice, so they won't seem unfamiliar. Says the Maharal, no, that's not what Rashi means. Rashi means, he doesn't say Kishetachteru, Shlo Yilachem Chadoshim Kishetachteru, they shouldn't be new. No, there shouldn't ever be a need in history to renew the covenant of Torah that we have with Hashem. If it's ever necessary to renew that covenant, something's wrong. So the covenant has to stay in place. The bris and the chiyuv of mitzvot, at least in general, has to stay in place, even during the times of Golos. Even on a fundamental, ideological level, Torah is connected to Eretz Yisrael, but Torah's applicability can't be allowed to last. It can't be that there's ever going to be a new Torah that's going to be presented. So Rabbi Hartman brings out this point in his notes as well. Now, what about the mitzvah Tzlinus Baris? In other words, when we go into Golis, we're not chayiv in Shemus and Isis. When we come back to Eretz Yisrael, we're not chayiv in Shemitah. We go back to Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Hartman says, it's not problematic if there are certain mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz. But there would be a problem if the whole system of mitzvahs stopped applying in Chutz La'aretz. Because then when we went back to Eretz Yisrael, there would have to be and the Sina Chadasha, there would have to be a new giving of the Torah. Again, the truth is, the Maharal doesn't speak in this language, and maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into the Maharal, but you can definitely see in this Maharal an anti-Christian polemic. Right? There's never going to be a second giving of the Torah. You know, the old Torah stopped, and now there's going to be a new Torah. Well, there's a big religion out there in the world that says exactly that. Old Torah, you know, there's an Old Testament and a New Testament. Abdul El Alf Abdul. Right? So Maharal is saying there can't be such a thing. Even if it's the same thing over again. Even if the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to us and says, I just want to renew all the things that I told you to do at Har Sinai. No. The Torah, once the Torah was given at Har Sinai, there can never be any hefsek, any break in the applicability of Torah. Specific mitzvahs may not apply. The specific mitzvahs are dependent on circumstances, but the system has to be in place. It can never be Chadoshim Kishetashru. It can't be that there's going to be a new covenant, a new Nesinat HaTorah, which is going to take place at that time. It's just a very different way of reading Rashi than what I think the conventional way is of understanding Rashi over here. If it stops. No, when we went into Golos, and Kodesh Baruch Hu basically told us, Torah doesn't apply because you're outside of Eretz Yisrael. So then when we came back to Eretz Yisrael, when we will come back to Eretz Yisrael, right, so then the Torah is going to have to be given again, because Baruch Hu is going to have to say, guess what, Rabbi Osai? Ruchim Habayim le'Eretz Yisrael. Here's this book. This book is going to tell you how to function. Ooh, wow, Kashrus? Whoa. I don't know if it happened to be literally at Sinai, but in other words, you know, it would be a new series of laws that had not been applicable at all in Chutz La'aretz. Would it be a new Nesina Satara? No, okay, so there's a difference between not being obligated to keep the Torah and not living up to your obligations, right? Every Jew in the world is obligated to keep the Torah, right? But again, the point of Maral was saying, I think it could be understood in light of an anti-Christian polemic. I mean, not that that's the only reason for the Maral saying it, but in other words, look at contrast to Lahavdil again, Christianity. There is a religion out there that says God gave a set of laws, and then he said these laws don't apply anymore, and now I'm giving you, Lahavdil, a new Torah. So that can never be. Once the Torah is given, right, in other words, that's one of the Yudgim Alekrei Amunah, the Torah is eternal. Right? Zos HaTorah Lotei Nechlefes, right? In other words, the Torah is not going to be exchanged. The Torah is not going to stop in its applicability. If the Torah didn't apply when we went into Golos, it would be a contradiction of that Yisod HaEmunah of the Rambam. Again, the Maral doesn't quite say it in those terms, but I think the Maral could certainly be understood in those terms. Right.
There is an idea of there were different times, even in the different genes in Iris Moyo.
Right.
I was in the Brothers and the Kolos that was cementing in yet the same thing.
Right. But no, I guess the difference is over there, you know. No one ever suggested that the Torah stopped applying. There were multiple stages of reaffirming a commitment. Right? Again, we'll have the little Alfei Avdolos, you know, when they talk about sometimes a couple after 50 years of being married, you know, will quote-unquote renew their vows. But again, it's not a Jewish concept. I'm saying it's, right? But nobody suggests that renewing your vows means that first we get divorced. And then we get remarried, you know, because whatever, you know, renewing our vows means that, okay, Avada was still married, we just want to give a little bit more of the strength. So, again, so the hot deal, but that's, you know, the Maral saying it's not possible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to rescind the Torah, even if he's going to give it back to us again at some later point.
When the Jews went to Avada, they thought that there was a trouble with divorce.
Right, and Adrabah, the Nevi'im had to come and tell them it's not true. Right, so the Maral is basically saying, you know, you could have thought that that would be true, right? It comes to Pesach and tells us that that's not true. In other words, you know, the mitzvah supply in Galus because precisely for that reason, we shouldn't look at what happened as a divorce.
One of the arguments that they use against Christianity, but a new Torah model, is that, you know, the person who's giving a new Torah, you would logically have taken the new Torah before he gave the oath.
Right.
You would have a whole big thing, a public spectacle, take the oath back, say, okay, guys, here's the new one.
Right.
That's one of the arguments that they use. They say, and the big rule says that, no, that it's just a public factor that sort of shows that the New Testament is like, it's like chewy. There's no way in the New Testament, because I think it was voice, they said it. There's no way in the New Testament that would say, and the Lord spoke to Peter, and the Lord spoke to Paul, and the Lord spoke to that man. So he said that. You can have the chutzpah to say, so it's just not to show that.
Right. But you know, even if the Rebbe Shalom himself would, you know, in theory, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have said the Torah no longer applies, and then 70 years later could have come back and said, now I'm giving it over again. But even that, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu in theory could have done that, he would not have done that. That's what the Maharal is saying. Fundamentally, once Hashem gave the Torah, you know, he was never going to, there was never going to be a period of time where the Torah would cease to apply.
Another thing, though, that the whole meaning of the content doesn't apply only to
Hanukkah,
it goes back to the beginning part.
Right, so the Maharal actually makes that part. I skipped through that part of the Maharal. You know, in other words, the Maharal is the Kasha. You know, after these psukim, it says, "Laman yirbu yemechad yemeven eichem al ha'adama, asher nishba Hashem lavo seichem." So that's the established back in Eretz Yisrael. So the samta means whether you're in Golos or you didn't go into Golos, they still apply. That's how you understand the Rashi. Okay, we'll pick up next Monday night. That's Hashem. Just everyone a good Shabbos.